Back. And back with us tonight is one of America's great people, Clifford Carnicom. He is what I call a citizen scientist. He has done more to help us understand aerosol spraying, otherwise known as chemtrails, and now Morgellons than any team of people could ever do. And he's going to bring us up to date tonight on a lot of very interesting things. And I'm very honored to have him back. He is an extremely busy man. We're going to talk about blood issues, Morgellons, a status report, and some future research topics as well. Clifford, are you there?
I sure am, Jeff. Thanks very much for the opportunity to be here again tonight.
Always a pleasure, sir. It goes back many years, and you're still at it. I'm amazed.
It does now. We've got close to a deck. Well, we've got 11, 12 years coming up pretty soon.
Wow. Okay, the last time you were on, we talked about a number of actually mind-bending issues, and if you want to touch on those briefly before we move on to tonight as a primary venue, go right ahead.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and thank you also very much for devoting your continuous effort to these subjects. Also, we have so many subjects that are important to us, and I know this is only one of many, but I really appreciate your continuity.
My pleasure.
And dedication, devotion over the years on this. I thought we would take just a few minutes. You know, I remember on the last interview we did, which I think was in September, we focused on a research paper that was written by a geneticist and a chemist. And that was well covered, I think. And so I'm not going to go over that again other than make a reference to it. And then, if I recall correctly, at the tail of the interview, we brought up a couple subjects which were actually quite important. We had just a couple minutes. And I just wanted to sort of reiterate those issues. I really don't think we're going to have time to go over those in any kind of detail because there is even more substance, I think, that has developed since that time. But I did want to make a reference to them and then get into the heart of a main paper for tonight and then end with I know what will be a very passing glimpse of many, many serious issues that have emerged very quickly, actually. In the last couple of weeks, even.
Oh, really? Oh, all right. Well.
But in our last interview, from what I can gather, was I think it was in September of this year, so not as long as we have waited sometimes, so I really do appreciate that. Back to this interview of last time, we talked about a paper by Richard Smith, and really the main point I wanted to make is we talked about a paper which conducted by all appearances, a proper and formal laboratory analysis of filament samples, biological filament samples, that were associated with the Morgellons condition. And the result of that paper was actually rather astounding to me, and I had uncovered it. It looks like at least a couple of years had passed before I that paper was brought to my attention through one of the members of the institute I'm involved in. And that paper was pretty astounding because it had some very specific and definitive information in it about what was involved. And specifically, it mentioned a blood protein that was in that filament in significant quantities.
Mm-hmm.
It had mentioned the existence of keratin,
mm-hmm.
Which has become more and more interesting over time. Keratin is a protein that's similar to basically our hair,
mm-hmm.
A very hard substance, difficult to break down under most cases. And over the years, we see that this actually has, it looks like, a great deal of significance as an external carrier or sheath of what is going on inside that is much more complex and generally usually hidden from view. But he had the keratin mentioned, he had the albumin mentioned, a blood protein, and then he had an unidentified fluorescent protein, if we recall, and he very specifically stated that this could not be matched with any human protein. Now, the only point I want to make tonight is that, you know, at the time that article was written, at least a couple of years had passed, and this individual had sent that information to a university that had the proper resources to identify that protein, and nothing had happened by the 2 years, you know, that I had discovered the paper. And the point I want to make tonight is that, you know, another 3 months have passed since we discussed this, brought attention to it, and to my knowledge, again, I can be mistaken, but to my knowledge, there is no further information on the identification of that specific protein that was mentioned as a glaring need in that report and was sent to a sophisticated laboratory. I believe it's Oklahoma State University. And to my knowledge, nothing has transpired or no information has been made public on that identification. So I'm bringing this up because over and over and over, we're going to keep seeing these fundamental questions that have emerged. And it's not a matter of once. They're emerging over and over and over. And there is still no satisfactory response to very obvious and glaring issues. And that is one that did make it into the laboratory. That was, you even had a strong basis to work from and mm-hmm. still unfinished. And as we go along tonight, I think that we have repeating themes over a decade mm-hmm. that are of the same magnitude, if not even greater, than a specific protein analysis. So that's the point, that to my knowledge, nothing has progressed on that issue, and okay. the need is as paramount now as it was 3 months ago when you and I spoke. And I hope that people will refer back to that interview to recall the specifics and details of it. The other two topics that came up in between the paper that you and I are going to concentrate on tonight, we made a passing mention. Made passing mention of, I believe. And the first one had to do with the identification of erythrocytic forms, blood cell forms,
mm-hmm.
Within a cultured sample. Now, the cultured sample comes from the gum area, the dental area, using the a wine test that many of us are familiar with now.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of swishing that around. And but there was I'm trying to see if this one had decomposition. The title of this paper was Blood Issues Intensify, and this did not have a decomposition process take place that we're going to take forward later. This was the original culture form in wine from a dental sample. And the point of this paper was that there were two specific forensic-level tests that were done over a period of several months that gave a positive result on the identification of hemoglobin within those culture samples. So this issue of erythrocytes that we've been talking about now for 10 years is one of these issues that keeps coming back, and it's at a very, very serious level. And we're long past the days of wondering whether there's an issue here or not. We have a body of evidence over a decade now to the level of forensic tests that show the existence of these blood cells or erythrocytes within the cultured environments.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's another major accomplishment here. It just is. The fact that we are now in a position where this material can be cultured gives us a laboratory setting and some degree of control now
right.
over the examination of the materials that we're speaking of.
For our listeners, Clifford, going back to your early research of gathering air samples and so forth, what is the tie-in for our listeners between the air sample, the aerosol contaminants that you were able to find and what we're talking about tonight. Is there a direct line?
Well, this is one of our main issues for tonight, and I'll go into it in more depth later on. But there has been, first of all, there has been the detection of erythrocytes or red blood cells in airborne samples now close to a period of 10 years.
Right.
Okay? So this was occurring.
Now, are these, excuse me, I have to interrupt one more time, please.
Yeah.
Are these erythrocytes the same as are found in the average human being, or are they different?
We don't know. You know, it's a great question. We don't know those details yet, and in fact, that's the other paper that I wanted to make a brief reference to before we got into our main topic tonight,
okay.
And that was this paper that was called Artificial Blood, mm-hmm. and then there's a question mark out of it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
This is sort of my response to your question. I have written a whole paper which shows the extraction and development of this erythrocytic form from these cultures. And it's not clear whether they are, let's say, human or not. I will say it was titled Artificial Blood because there is a very strong indication mm-hmm. that those things are too perfect to be human blood.
Wow.
They have a very, very perfect geometry, no aberrations of any kind, and the conclusion of that paper was that we need to consider it as a potential artificial form.
In other words, somebody built it, and they're perfect.
It looks quite possible that this thing is synthetic in some way, at that part of it. There's different
and
levels, but at that part.
For those of you listening, you are hearing correct information here, and Clifford confirmed it. He discovered it, that these perfect erythrocytes were found in air samples in New Mexico. I don't know how many other locations. What are they doing in the air?
Well, those are from the cultured samples, Jeff, just so you know.
Okay,
those artificial are from a cultured form.
All right, got it. But we did find similar in the air. Be right.
Absolutely.
Okay, back with Clifford Kernicom. So again, just to reiterate what I was mentioning as we went into the break, yes, Clifford found blood cells, desiccated or otherwise, in aerosols, air samples, in the air. Okay, let's just keep it real simple and rudimentary. Over 10 years ago, I guess now, Clifford, that's a long time. So what are blood cells or blood cell-like objects doing floating around in the air? How did they get up there? These are questions that remain to be satisfactorily and firmly answered, but they are very important questions. So please go ahead, Clifford.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff. And I think we're actually going to come back to a couple of the questions that you brought up earlier through the night. And I'm thinking that in terms of planning, I'll try to allow about an hour to get through this main paper that's the subject of tonight, and then about a half hour, the last half hour or so to 45 minutes on those future research topics, which are going to be very important that we get through that, because it's actually going to come back to your question about airborne samples, and we do need to make that tie, so I'll do my best on timing. But for now, I think it's time to relax a little bit. I have a lot of information here that I'm trying to sort out in terms of what's a logical way to present this. But there's a paper that I wrote now in the beginning of October called Morgellons, a status report, and this paper came about because there was what I would call a breakthrough in the culturing process that revealed many aspects to this that could not be seen before, and because of that, quite a few discoveries emerged within a fairly short time period, and this paper, yeah, hopefully it's fairly well organized, but as I see this, it's like just item after item after item was coming out from this work, and there's something like 20 points on this paper. And we could take all night, I think, actually going through these. Mm-hmm. We won't have time to, so mm-hmm. I'm going to try to pick those that are most important for us. Mm-hmm. And there's two ways I can go about this. This paper has a textual component to it, where it's listing these items that, to me, I would regard as important. And then there's a series of photographs. And I really don't know the perfect way here, because they are both important. They both complement one another. So I suspect we'll cross between both of them. But that I'll start with the photographs. If any folks are able to get a hold of this paper and see it visually as we're talking, obviously pictures are easier and quicker to understand than the language. But the language is probably going to become important as we go along, so I'll try to cross between them. But I'd like to sort of relax with this paper and take it from the beginning and describe what it is that is being shown here. And there's somewhat of a chronology taking place that shows an evolution that has taken over a decade. And it's really unfortunate and sad, honestly, that it has taken that long to get to this point. But nevertheless, that is what we are faced with. And so I'll start with the pictures here. And what we have at the top of this of the photograph section are some photographs of samples from the mouth and some wine cultures.
Okay, we want to direct people to the pictures for sure. So click on Clifford's name and go to carnicum.com. Is that where you want us to go, Clifford?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Just go to the front page and you'll see a main topic there that says Morgellons, a status report.
It's right there in the middle above
the right in the center with its own headliner.
Chemtrail pictures, right. That's where I am. I want everybody to be there. Okay.
And I appreciate if you're there too, because it will help
I'm here.
Us, because I want to make sure that we do answer questions, like I say, because I think there might be something.
Very good. Looking at photographs right now.
Right, and these photographs are near the bottom of this page, and probably have a couple dozen or a dozen and a half to get through. Now, the beginning of those photographs, they show some of the early samples that were developed in the culture medium. And one of the photographs just shows the material that comes from the mouth. And most people that have done this test with the wine realize that they are producing this material. In fact, I actually don't have any exceptions to that at this point. And that's that photograph to the top right. And it's very ugly. There's no way around it. It's like a mass of material. And you know, this is not a precipitation. I'm familiar with those kind of claims that are being made. This is not a precipitate. This is a filament, okay, that's emerging from the mouth when exposed to red wines. And that's another question that's going to come up here. Many, many, many questions are coming up. But just the whole the wine chemistry that's involved here, and why wine happens to be working in certain ways, both for extraction as well as culturing, is a fascinating question in itself. But we have this physical material, which just about anybody seems to be able to verify that they produce. Now, the top left photo shows this material placed in wine. Now, and one beneath it shows it placed on an agar medium. And actually, the work started on the agar medium. That takes a long time. When things are in a solid form, it's harder to work with. But that was the first breakthrough, was when this material was put onto an agar medium. Indeed, it did grow a culture. And then the first thing that we learn is that if we examine that growth, it is identical to the filaments that come from the mouth. So we have a reproduction, a growth of the material, and the means to develop and control that in a laboratory setting. So that's a first important level of progress. That's on agar. Now, the top one is in wine, and this is one of those, whether you call it serendipitous or not, it's certainly accidental, but there's no reason in the world that I know of that you would think or even ask the question or try to develop a culture in wine, particularly.
Okay, very good. Stand by. We'll pause. Take a look at the pictures, and this is a very comprehensive and fascinating display that we're looking at. Again, Science by Clifford Carnicum, and some extraordinary discoveries that maybe certain people in certain places would rather he not be making. But here they are, pictures, proof, the works. We'll be right back.
Attacks by special interest groups and the global elite on our First Amendment, our Constitution, and our way of life are growing as we speak. We are truly in imminent danger. Rents.com and the Jeff Rents Program have, for 16 years, stood firmly with you on our Constitution and your right to consider all sides of the most critical issues of our times. We are asking your support to better serve you and our country, to strengthen this one-of-a-kind bastion of true journalism and voice of reality. Honest journalism is beyond rare today. Rents.com and this program have no secret agenda, no rampaging egomania, and we cover the news like no other source anywhere. We don't just rewrite wire copy stories and pretend we're doing research. Our site and program are the most plagiarized on the net. So, in these truly challenging times, we're asking you to help us become even stronger by making a gesture of support. Please, take the link near the top of Rents.com and do whatever you can to assist us while there is still time. Look for the support link near the top of Rents.com.
Okay, let's get right back to our conversation with Clifford Carnicom, looking at photos of a very, very important nature here. Go ahead, Clifford, please. And again, your comment was that this was a filament and not just a piece of old food or something is very important. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. These are definitive filament samples without any question. And, you know, I realize that there are many different aspects to these problems that we're facing in this particular issue of Morgellons. But remember, unfortunately, it broadens out and does include aerosol aspects, whether we like it or not. It looks like that link is pretty darn strong to me from what I see. I know there's a lot of different aspects to this, and I do not claim to have all the answers. And it is pretty clear that I am focused on two, let's say, particular themes, one involving the blood and one involving these particular filaments and their nature. And the reason that I'm doing that, just so that people know, is because I am seeking to act at a level that appears to be a common denominator, regardless of the level of manifestation of outward symptoms that is occurring. In other words, that filament sample at the top right that we're looking at, the reason that thing even came into being was through an individual. She actually makes no secret of it at this point. Dr. Gwen Scott is the one that discovered that a technique. She is to be given credit for it. And she is an individual that has clearly stated that she manifested these symptoms. And at this point, we're talking about visible, strong skin outward symptoms. Okay, and so she was a subject, one of many, but one who had pronounced symptoms, who was the basis for the discovery of the internal filaments.
Okay.
Now, from her work, it was extended to consider other subjects that do not display skin manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a result of this work where I have, let's call it inferred or concluded, either way you would like to, but I would conclude that the skin manifestation is not at all a sufficient condition or criteria to establish the existence of this condition. Because in those examinations involving random subjects as well as those that manifested symptoms, there are common denominators occurring in both blood anomalies as well as the existence of this filament material internal to the body. And those manifestations appear, with the best information I have available, to be affecting the general population, not an exclusive class. And so this is why I am so focused on these two particular aspects, because I regard them at this point to be common denominators that require a basis, a foundation of examination. And I realize that there are many other individuals reporting other levels and other manifestations. It's just that I can't operate at that level yet until we clear up some very fundamental questions that are occurring at what I would say is a common level in the general population.
Now let me spend just a moment on that. What Clifford is suggesting is that Morgellons as an overall agent in the population at large is common. And it is not only diagnosed sufficiently by looking at someone's skin for lesions, for fibers, and so forth. Now, we've been saying that from the beginning, that filaments, fibers, and other manifestations of what Morgellons is or appears to be are probably rife throughout the body, in the brain, in the liver, in the lungs, in the kidneys, you name it, in the bloodstream. And people who do dark field microscopy are finding things that they never saw 10 years ago. They don't know what they are. There is some bizarre and fundamentally odd manifestation going on in the human body on a very large scale in this country and probably around the world, which may or may not be tied in directly to the skin portion of the Morgellons syndrome. It probably is. But my feeling after studying this for years from a layman's perspective, not a scientist like Clifford, is that the skin manifestation may be one of the latter stages of this infestation. It's not a primary, I don't believe. And when you have a skin manifestation, you can certainly expect with a reasonable certainty and likelihood that these fibers have penetrated pretty much your entire body. And that's just my very crude and rudimentary summation of things as I see them.
Thank you, Jeff. And it's not crude and rudimentary at all. It's very accurate from anything that I know and see from everything I've studied on this. You know, I went to a talk this last week, which is really rather fascinating, but it was by a medical doctor, longstanding. And this individual was talking on the liver. And she made a little comment there that just caught my interest, and it relates to what we're talking about. And she made the statement that the skin is an excretory organ. Now, that's actually fascinating because it sure makes sense. It's true. Our skin is an organ that excretes toxins. And I would concur and agree completely that the indications I have are that if this material is coming out of the skin, that that is simply an outer manifestation of attempts by the body to excrete toxic form. Mm-hmm. And everyone may not agree with that. It's just what I think the evidence indicates thus far, because if you dig deeper on any of those individuals that manifest skin symptoms, it does appear as though there is a pattern of anomalous blood that is at a greater degree than those that are not manifest.
And we still, aside from Jan Smith and her knee joint surgeries, she had her knees replaced, we don't have any really blue chip autopsy documentation of this syndrome in the inner portion of the body. And we should have that. We need that. Unfortunately, no one can really volunteer for that while they're still alive and above room temperature. But we do need autopsies. We do need forensic work to find out if what Clifford is finding in the mouth and what people are pulling out of their skin and what was in the middle of Jan Smith's knees is indeed penetrating throughout the body. I believe there's no question it is. You'd have to be silly to think otherwise.
Yeah.
Clifford,
actually,
please
go
ahead.
The work is already showing that this material is crossing major systems of the body. Any notion that it's just in the gums or the teeth is actually completely false. The urinary system has been involved, saliva, the blood. Really, everything indicates it is the body systems that are infiltrated. And it would be erroneous to think that we happen to have a localized region just in the teeth and the gums.
Very good. All right, stand by. We're taking a look at Morgellons through the eyes and the genius of Clifford Carnicom. And we'll continue our conversation in just a few minutes. We'll be right back. Okay, back with Clifford, and we're taking a look at Morgellons, which obviously continues to spread unchecked, unnoticed by what they call the mainstream and all news media, except for this program primarily, and what Clifford puts out on his website and a few others. It remains below the radar, so far below you'd almost need a microscope to see it. The CDC continues to obfuscate and lie about it, nothing coming from them of substance, and we don't expect anything. We do believe that they probably know far more than we do, but they're not about to say it. Just like we watch the World Health Organization now sitting on the viral genetic sequences from Ukraine. They're lying. They will not release them. So nothing new there, and that's why the work of Clifford Carnicom and others is so crucially important. We have to do it. Can't rely on the government. We know who they are now. Please go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Back to these photographs then now. So we've seen the base material that we're starting with, and then we brought up the fact that if you put this material, this filament material, which comes from internal to the body, it's not just the gums, but it comes internal from the body, if you place that material in wine, of all things, there is a surprising result, and it is that in addition to agar, that wine is a suitable medium for the reproduction and growth of this filament. Now, whether it's an accidental discovery or not, I can't say, but it was certainly peculiar and unusual when it happened. It was accidental in terms of my side because that material was placed in the wine, and there's no reason you would do that from a culture standpoint. You know, you don't. Wine doesn't sit around for 10 years to grow pathogens. It's not in a medium or environment that you think would be productive for pathogenic growth. It's primarily alcohol-based, so there's a lot of very interesting questions that come about here in terms of the wine chemistry down the road. But the very same material that is useful to extract this material is also found to be useful as a culture medium, and that's an interesting paradox here, but it is the case. So we see a photograph where the material is simply placed in the wine, and it was an accident. I just let it sit. I do that sometimes, and I wasn't expecting anything. But it sat for several weeks undisturbed, and you would think nothing in the world is happening. You have no reason to think anything's going to happen, but after several weeks, things do happen. And in really almost every case I can think of, I don't know really if I have any exceptions yet, but I'm sure there's always some. It's just a case of life, but if you watch that material for a couple weeks or whatever it's going to take, anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 weeks, there is a growth that occurs within wine, very unexpected. And these are the pictures now, the next tier down. We'll see, you know, you have one, two, three. The agar is the white material. That's its first form. It progresses through three levels. The first initial layer is pure white. The middle layer is a green color. And that's what you're starting to look at right now, or what we're looking at of those photographs immediately below that have a very greenish color to them. And then ultimately will turn very dark, deep black. And by the way, when you were talking about worldly consideration of distribution, one of the subjects that was participated in this study is a resident of China and has been for several years.
Uh-huh.
And that individual produced a material quite fully, let's say. So that's something from the other side of the globe. There's actually no reason at all to think that there is any restriction with respect to human low.
That's species-wide, then.
On this. Mm-hmm. But if we see those pictures now, we see a mid-level development of this culture. It's very unusual material. I would claim at this point that this is a what I would call a primary pathogenic form. It's beyond just a maybe to me. I've seen this stuff dozens of times now under great detail and studied extensively under the microscope. In comparison, what you have to do, again, is compare that culture with the original material that you're starting with and look for any kind of parallels. And this is where it becomes more and more complex and more astounding, I suppose, as we go along, the degree of correspondence. So that mid-level shows a significant culture growth, which is representative of a mid-level maturation of this pathogenic form. And it has some peculiarities that it gets pretty thick. It can get up to, it goes as thick as a dish, the dish will allow. There's really no stopping of it other than the boundary of the container, which it's contained within. It can be up to an inch thick there, only because the container is an inch thick, has numerous deep folds in it. Unfortunately, the conclusion is that this material is what is in our body, and I think anyone that actually saw this material in live would find it very distressing and would certainly be asking some questions at the very least. Is what are we really dealing with? And then you should be asking, why is that growing on wine to that level? What is going on with that chemistry?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the mid-level growth. Now, the next photograph is an important turning point, and I have to try to get through all the, we have to watch our time, I have to get through all of these photographs by about a quarter after is what I'm guessing. So I'll do my best, but speed me up if I lose it. But this next photograph is a turning point in terms of the research, and it shows a test tube with some material in it being heated up. And whether you want to call this accidental, again, however these things happen, that's not my, I don't have a time to try and inquire in our discussion now how these discoveries happen, but we're fortunate that some of them do, at least. Unfortunately, they take 10 years and decades to happen when they should have taken days or months or weeks. But something happened, and that was I subjected this culture material, like we saw in the mid-photograph there, I subjected it to two changes. The first would be I subjected it to sodium hydroxide, an alkali, a common name, a lye. I subjected that culture to a solution of lye in that test tube. That's the first part. The second thing that was done was I also subjected that solution to heat, basically up to the boiling point. The process at this point right now brings it right up to the boiling point and holds it about that temperature for anywhere, call it from 15 minutes, 5 to 15 minutes, to try to hold it right at that level, sort of like simmering away. And when you start out, the progression is as follows. When you put this material in the, put it in water first, and it'll be completely insoluble. There'll be no reaction of any kind taking place. When you put in the lye, and that's what I've worked on most recently, is to get a handle on the strength of that lye, and that's been done, and we'll talk about that another day, but we know how strong that material, the solution is now.
Yeah.
But when you subject it to lye or sodium hydroxide at a certain concentration, the first part of the reaction will occur, and what you'll see is that, those filaments will turn very dark black, first of all, and you'll see what you think is some decomposition taking place. It looks like it's starting to break apart a little bit. Now, there's some tie-ins here. We don't have time to go into all of it, but if we go way, way back to those environmental samples, EPA filaments, one of the things that was discovered about that was that it reacts to an alkali. It's about the only thing in the world I could get it to react to. But I did get that filament sample way back in the very early days to react to an alkali material. And that was reported, and it's been hanging out for a dozen years until we bring in ties now that we never really could have foreseen. And the tie-ins are going to be with keratin and proteins and what breaks down that particular protein. That's what going to be the tie for people to be looking at. But that's the first part of the reaction that turns black, and it looks like it's starting to decompose, but that decomposition is not complete at all. It just doesn't go very far. But it does affect it in some way. When you subject it to heat, a very interesting and significant change occurs, and that is that solution will turn a rather, let's call it, deep dark red color, and enough to the point where it certainly appears, well, there's no question about it, there is further decomposition that takes place. But my interpretation at this point is that you have some kind of denaturization process taking place in the proteins. Heat is important in producing the final result that we're going to continue on with in our discussion and the work. Now, I'll just say this in passing in terms of, I'm not trying to draw the conclusion from this, but I'll just give you the anecdotal reaction that occurred here. When this material turned dark red, I looked at it and I said, you know, it actually looks like blood. Now, I'm not trying to say it's blood at that point. I'm just saying, you know, it actually looked like blood. I showed that to another individual. This individual had no idea what I was doing, not a clue what I was doing. And I just showed them the test tube, and I said, what does it look like? What does this look like to you? And she said, it looks like blood. And it looks like blood in solution. In other words, the degree would depend upon, you know, how much lye, how much water, and this type of thing. But certainly from the visual side, it has a very unusual and unexpected appearance when subjected to this chemical process. Okay. Now, that, and we're still there, right, Jeff?
Yep.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much. This represents a turning point because once this chemical change and transformation had occurred, this material was placed under the microscope. Now, what's different here and important is that you now have a solution. A solution entirely changes access, the chemistry, potential development of cultures, changes everything in aqueous chemistry versus solid chemistry, and I have to say offers major advantages.
Wow. All right. We'll take our break on that note and come back. So it's beginning, Clifford, to look like there are certainly man-made components to this at the very least, correct?
Everything is saying that. We have something that's been engineered here.
All right, very good. Thank you. Be right back with all of you folks in just a few minutes.